For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution. They lost again. They remain without a point in MLS play following the Revs losing 2-1 at home to FC Cincinnati. The Revs still hold the worst record in Major League Soccer, now down to 0-4, and have dropped the first two MLS regular season home games after only losing once at home during the regular season in 2023. I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me today is Tom Pinzone. Tom, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm just trying to figure out where I am on the bus. I haven't quite figured out if I'm on it, driving it, sitting in the back, or like I did often in high school, missed it completely.
Well, this bus is, I think a lot of people are hopping off of the bus. If we're talking about the enthusiasm bus, this season is certainly seeming to go a bit sideways real fast. Also seemingly, I just want to apologize in advance too, because I started last podcast hyping up the Providence College Friars, and we were recording this after the March Madness selection show, and not only did the Friars not make it, they weren't even close. So I apologize to everyone, all the PC fans out there, because I absolutely jinxed your team. But you can still gamble on March Madness, and where better to gamble on it than our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all of your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. I guess you won't be following PC's path to the playoffs because their season's over. But anyway, experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. So head out to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Let's get into our key takeaways brought to you by our friends over at the Rebellion Support Group. Be sure to check them out on Twitter at NERebellion and at their website at nerebellion.org. Tom, what is your key takeaway from today?
My key takeaway, well, first of all, if you're looking for a 12-5 upset in the NCAA tournament, you can just go ahead and put Grand Canyon University straight through to the next round. That's probably the best thing I have for today is helping you out with your NCAA bracket. My key takeaway is I left the first home game, pretty frustrated. And then, in talking with my wife on the way home, kind of came around to the fact that they'd actually played pretty well, watched most of the game back, looked at all the statistics, and turns out they actually had played really well and should have got something more. Today, left the stadium just as frustrated as last time, had a look at the stats, watched the entire game back after I got home, and am now much, much less convinced that there's nothing to be concerned about with the way that this season is headed.
Nothing to be concerned about. You're not concerned at all.
No, I am. I'm much more concerned now.
Oh, much more concerned. That's a lot concerned. Less surprising. That's a lot less surprising. Good. I misheard you completely. Yeah, no, yes. I'm very concerned about this team as well. I think the other day, too, we said, there's not a ton to take away from this midweek Champions Cup game. I took a lot away from this game. And I mean, there is really no excuse. We set the table during the midweek show, but for those that missed it, Champions Cup, obviously, you have lack of rest. You have a lot of fatigue. You have a lot of travel fatigue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This game, you're on kind of equal footing with FC Cincinnati, where they're also in the Champions Cup. They also had a road game. They also had an unfavorable travel situation. They rested more players in the starting lineup than you. You're the home team. There was really no excuse for the Revolution to come out and play that flat, especially at the beginning of the second half. This seems to be a team that is deeply flawed. And there's a lot here that I'm kind of shaking my head at. I don't know if some players have just declined in form. I don't know if some players are just still getting used to Caleb Porter's system, or it might just be a mentality thing. But either way, this 0-4 start is, I think, worse than we could have possibly imagined. And you can blame some of that on the travel and Champions Cup, but you know, none of the other Champions Cup teams are 0-4 in the league. So this to me is a bit of a disaster. And I think we can start to wonder if this team is going to make the playoffs. A long way to go. I still know it's still March, but I think we are. Let me rephrase that. This team is much more to be a bubble team, to borrow another term from March Madness. This is much more to be a bubble team on the playoffs than a legitimate MLS Cup contender. Is that a better way to put it, Tom?
Oh yeah, I mean it's gonna be a fight now to even try and get into the back door of the playoffs, which, you know, like we talk about, I think every time we reference the playoffs, you know, this is a league where more teams make it than don't. Right. There was a team, I think, Sporting Kansas City last year. Their first 10 games of the season, they didn't get a single win, and they still managed to squeak their way in. So, I mean, it's possible, but every week that goes by when you come out with 0 points, you know, obviously, it's just math, right? The amount of points that are available continues to go down, and you're not adding anything, into the points column. Yeah, like you said, as of now, they are all the way at the bottom of a 29-team league, which is it's tough to be bad enough to find yourself all the way down there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm going to add over to my key takeaway, which is just consistency and the lack of consistency this team has. And I want to read off a quote that Caleb Porter had in the post game, because I thought it actually was similar to my thoughts, too, about how they came out flat in the second half. And you know, it's kind of a pile over from this Atlanta game last week where, you know, they just got absolutely demolished in the first half, not the first half, the first bit of that second half. And that just seemed to lose the game. Similar situation here. Acosta comes in and it just seemed like the second half, they just came out so flat, just not a consistent 90 minutes all the way through. And that was the deciding factor today. So Caleb Porter said, on conceding the two goals in the early minutes of the second half, really three, if you're looking at the one that was taken back due to offsides, but Caleb Porter said, not good enough. First of all, I take responsibility. I'm the head coach and it's my job to pick the players, prepare the players and win games. That hasn't happened. So the buck starts and stops with me. Needs to be better. I thought we played very well first half. I thought we carried the game and felt like we were in great spots. We got in great spots to score. We have to find the goal. I don't know what happened to start the second half. For me, that's a big question I have. And that's the question I asked them. How do we, in a home game where we're playing well, do we start the second half that poor? And what changed? For me, it's the mentality. It needs to be stronger. And in front of supporters, we concede two goals. Now we're in a hole. And then all of a sudden, the mentality changes. So for me, that tells me everything I need to know. We have to work on the mentality of this group because we lost this game and because we started the second half poor. And I think you can have as good a lineup as you want on paper, but when you have moments and parts of the game where you just switch off, that's when you have a real problem. And I feel like this is the second week in a row. You're going up against a good opponent like Atlanta, Cincinnati, and you have moments where you switch off. Teams that, you know, make deep runs in the playoffs, they don't switch off. So I think that's a big concern for me. And I'm glad to see that Caleb Porter not only saw it, but he's calling it out publicly.
I don't know. As a coach who has, just as often as I've found the correct way to address a team and found the incorrect way just as many times, I really struggle to understand what he seriously thinks he's going to gain from coming out in the fourth game of the season. In that press conference, all the way, he also reminded all of us that he has won 2 MLS Cups. He's very confident that he's not the problem. He said that. I know what I'm doing. Well, that's great. But the reality is that your team doesn't look like they know what they're doing at the start of the second half. And he's correct. That is on him, and it is his fault. He also decided to go ahead and bring in, he made a reference to the things that were happening last year. So we're going to bring that back. because a week ago he was saying just the opposite. Somebody asked him about being concerned about, you know, blowing a lead in the second leg like they did last year, Pachuca, right? And straight away his response was, oh, well, hey, you know, I wasn't here last year. But now when it's convenient for him, he's now going to go back and reference, oh, well, basically, you know, everything was a disaster here at the end of the season. And now all of a sudden he's bringing that into the present. So the whole the bus analogy, I don't understand what you're going to, what are you going to gain from that? You're calling your team out, saying that some of the guys are on the bus. Some of the guys are driving it. Some of the guys are sitting on the back and some of the guys aren't on it. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't understand what you gain coming out and having a moan and throwing your team apparently all over the bus, including throwing them under it. I don't understand what you think you're going to gain from that, you know, four games into your first season.
Yeah, let's get to that quote too. I want to give full context to the listeners. I love doing these podcasts with enough time between the final whistle and recording time, so we actually get the post game quotes and take a look at them. But so Porter was asked if he expected a difficult start to the MLS season and whether he is questioning himself or looking to the team's mentality to explain the slow start in league play. Here's what Porter said, quote, I'm not questioning myself other than I'll always analyze my role every game and what I can do better. But in terms of the vision and where we're going, I'm more convinced than ever we'll get there. This bus is moving. I'm learning that there are some guys that are on it. Some guys are on it and helping to drive it. Some guys are on it but sitting in the back. And some guys maybe aren't on it. In the end, I'll go back to my point that it starts with me. It's my responsibility to get the team there, but there's no question I know how to get it there. Interesting quotes about how he takes a lot of responsibility while also saying some people aren't on the bus and he's throwing them under the bus. Now, again, he doesn't mention any names. I thought it was interesting. And I think it's interesting how we're getting these quotes. I think you're right that maybe it's what is he gaining from this? You're right. I'm not sure what the end game is there unless he is really trying to apply the pressure to the locker room. But I think we kind of know, right? And I think this also goes back to the point that you had a bottom 10 team in the league last year at the second half of that season. I mean, you had a team that was playing terribly and you brought back 27 players. I'm not entirely convinced. I mean, we talk about how the team doesn't talk about 2023 unless it's convenient for him. I'm not totally convinced that the stink is gone from this 2023 disaster of a season and that maybe some people, I don't want to say want out, but maybe they aren't buying into this vision in the post-Bruce era. So anyway, I'll let you go because I know you have thoughts.
Well, yeah, but maybe the reason that there's still lingering issues from last year is because one of the interims is coaching the second team and popping around with the first team. The other guy that tried to, he tried to reinvent soccer formations and play Matt Polster in three different positions at the same time. He's still there as an assistant coach. The guy that was, you know, loves to take all the credit for all the good moves that he made is now the GM. So maybe that's the problem. If there's still lingering issues from last year, it's like, well, all the guys that were in charge last year are all still here. And we just got rid of Bruce and we brought in a cliche machine, Caleb Porter, who just comes out. And I mean, the guy literally contradicts himself. I take full responsibility. However, here's a list of reasons why it's not my fault. I mean, if any of these guys listen to that press conference, they're not going to hear I take full responsibility. They're going to hear the bus thing and start looking around at each other. And that's an opportunity to create division within a team. Start looking around saying, oh, well, who does he think is driving the bus? Who does he think is on the back of the bus? Who do we think has missed the bus? Like you're just inviting your team to start asking questions internally, which I don't really see that working out to his or anyone else's advantage.
And you know what this reminds me of, Tom? I don't know if you remember this, but so we started this podcast. Well, we rebooted it in 2018. And I remember Brad Friedel towards the end of that season said, we're going to make widespread changes. We're clearing out these people. He implied very, very heavily that there were going to be a lot of roster changes. And then clearly at some point he had a sit down with the general manager, Mike Burns, at that point. And they brought back most of the roster the following season. And clearly there was a philosophical difference between the two. So I think if Caleb Porter has some say of like, hey, these four guys aren't working out. We need to loan them. You know, we need to sell, you know, transfer them out. We need to trade them. Okay, that's fine. If he has some control here in his roster and who is buying into his vision and who is driving the bus and who's sitting at the front of the bus and who's happy to be on the bus, great. But this might be a situation where if there's a person that's not on the bus and not happy to be on the bus. And Caleb Porter goes to Kurt Arnolfo and says, hey, we need to get rid of this guy. And Kurt says, no, we love this guy. That's where it's going to be a problem, because that was a big problem in 2018 and 2019. So, yeah, interesting, very interesting that we are getting Caleb Porter really calling out his team. We get the first call out in a press conference before we get a first MLS win from Caleb Porter. So I don't think this is how we drew it up. This isn't exactly what we had in mind for a Revolution season, but very entertaining. I got to say, I am entertained.
Oh yeah. I mean, I could do an hour and a half on that press conference.
I was told in the off season that our best podcasts were during the Friedel years, because it was just so miserable and angry. And maybe we're going to be, we might have a full season of entertaining podcasts at this rate. But before we get into listener questions too, I wanted to ask you about one person, Henrik Ravas. First goal, misses the punch, not very impressed with him, but he did have a few nice saves in this one. I wanted your thoughts a few games in. What are your thoughts on Ravas? Do you think he's going to work out? Do you think, are you high on this guy? Are you low on him? What's your initial reactions on Ravas so far?
It seems like he is he's the convenient scapegoat. And I am not trying to insult anyone's soccer intelligence, but the most convenient scapegoat every single time a team gives up goals and loses is, oh, well, just blame the goalkeeper. It must be the goalkeeper's fault, because it's very simple to just say, well, ball went in net, goalkeeper not supposed to let that happen, must be bad goalkeeper. It's slightly more complicated than that. The first goal, he said that he tried to position himself to protect for a ball that came over the wall, which makes sense. And he tried to protect like closer to the post that the shot was being taken from. That also makes sense. What he didn't protect from was Acosta shooting under the wall, because the Revs decided that they weren't going to put somebody lying down on the ground behind the wall. Porter also said in his press conference that he's never seen that in a game that he's coached before. He's never seen a player shoot under the wall and score. It's like, well, it has happened. That is not on Ravas at all. The Revs, their technical staff, whoever's in charge of getting them organized on defending set pieces, didn't have somebody lie down behind the wall. So unless Ravas was supposed to be the one lying down behind the wall, it's not his fault. The first goal I would say is the first time this season that I think, yeah, he came out to get the ball. He didn't get a whiff of getting any sort of a touch on it, and it went right past him. And, you know, you're always told as a goalkeeper, if you're going to come out like that, you've got to get something on it. So the first goal, I would put the majority of the blame on him for that one goal out of the 10 that they've conceded, and not the other 9. You know, a couple of weeks ago it was, oh, he came out and he couldn't catch it off of Benteke's head. It's like Benteke has made a living scoring goals with his head. And then this other, the one the other night where he parries the first shot, but couldn't get the rebound, and people that have no understanding of goalkeepers come out and say, oh, we should have caught that. Yet, no, sorry. Continental European goalkeepers are taught and trained from 10 years old. If you are not 100% certain that you can catch it, punch, parry it away. Just knock it away and try and get back on your feet and deal with it. Like, he wasn't going to catch that. Anyone thinks that he was going to catch that has never tried to play goal before.
Hmm. Well, actually, I've never tried to play goal before, so that might be
quite difficult.
Well, you're not worried. Long story short, not worried about Ravas in the slightest.
No, Ravas is probably a slightly above average MLS goalkeeper.
Yes.
And I think people's issue is that they can't handle the fact that Petrovic is gone. He was probably the best goalkeeper that has ever played in MLS in its eternity. And some people think that the Revs are just going to turn around and find the next Petrovic every 18 to 24 months for the rest of time. Like, it's not going to happen. Even Turner, they got lucky with Turner. They taught Turner how to stop shots. They didn't teach him how to control or pass a soccer ball, but they at least turned him into a decent shot stopper. But that's not going to happen all the time either. He's slightly above average, and that's usually what you're going to get.
Yeah, I think we've been very, very spoiled for the last half decade in having Matt Turner and Georgi Petrovic, that this Ravas is kind of more down to earth in what you can expect for a MLS goalkeeper. And so now that we don't have a MLS all-star goalkeeper, we're going to see a little more mistakes. We're not going to see as phenomenal goalkeeping, but I still think he has some pretty solid reflexes. He still seems to be a decent skills all the way around. I'm not worried about him in the long run, although first, I think 4 games, 10 goals conceded. That obviously is not all on the goalkeeper. So I think the results will get a little bit better going forward. And I'm not super, super worried about Ramos so far. But let's get into our listener mailbag, which is brought to you today by Subchuck Law. You can find Subchuck Law's website in our show notes. Are you ready for these listener questions? They are upbeat and positive as always, Tom.
I am ready. I'm ready for every single one of them.
All right. Well, let's start here. Mike D, hot seats. Who's on them and who's close? We're 4 games into the MLS season. I'm going to preface with that. I do not think anyone's getting a pink slip tomorrow, but let's assume this poor form continues for the next few months. Tom, do you see anyone getting a pink slip or getting on the hot seat?
I mean,
and by the way, really, time out. I think what this question is asking too is Caleb Porter, Kurt Anolfo, Brian Bolello. Let's go with those.
Oh, front office staff?
Yeah, sure. Include them too.
No.
Okay.
First of all, Brian Bolello, you know, no, he's not responsible for tactics and playing style and player acquisitions. You know, he's a perfectly reasonable, nice guy. Kurt Anolfo, he just got named GM. So he's getting at least one coach where he can let that coach have his run. He can fire him and bring in another guy. So as a GM, I think you have to go through two coaches before you're seriously going to be questioned in your role as GM. And what ties into that is if Kurt Anolfo turns around and fires Caleb Porter in his first season, then that makes it look like Anolfo made a bad decision and he's already burnt. It's like, okay, so you're going to bring in a guy next year. And if we're at the same place, it's two different coaches that haven't had success in 2 years. So maybe you're the problem. So no, none of the three of them, I can't see them going anywhere. And that would be an overreaction. You know, as much as some of us may not like Bologna Man, you know, it would be an overreaction at this point to not give them more time. And the Revs have not shown themselves to be quick to pull the trigger on really almost anything. So I don't see any of the three of them going anywhere.
Yeah, and just a couple of other questions I'll throw out here just to check them off. Denden 29 says, here's my question. Does Kirk get fired before 20 games? He asked this the last 2 games. And I said this last time too. It's his first season. And I think if anyone is of those three, who's most likely to get fired, it's probably going to be Caleb Porter because the narrative has been shaped. This is a win now roster. And Caleb Porter came in, said, I love this roster. Oh, my goodness, this is a great team. And so if anyone's going to go, it's going to be him first. And I do not anticipate him, you know, being fired anytime soon in the next few months. I think he's going to be given at the very least through the summer transfer window. It would have to be a disastrous, like Bob Bradley and TFC last year, locker room chaos, you know, wooden spoon contention. And I also think, too, that we would be a lot closer to maybe Caleb Porter being on the hot seat if they lost in the Champions Cup to Independiente. If there was an embarrassing loss like that, that would be a different story. I think if you're getting blown out 2-3 goals at a time, you know, if all these games, if they're not one goal games, if they're, you know, you're losing 5-0, 4-0, I think you have more of a reason, similar to how the Brad Friedel era ended. I think at the very minimum, we're talking Caleb Porter is getting the summer. And even then, I can't really see it. I think all these guys are, in terms of Porter and Anolfo, they're at least here through the end of the year. And again, it would have to be a major, major disaster for them not to get a full season. In terms of Bolello, too, I know everyone likes to talk about Bolello. I think if the Everett Stadium thing falls apart, that has more of an impact on his job than how the Revs do this season. So we did get a couple other questions too on Porter. We already talked about that. How long is Porter's leash? 0-4 in the league, not a hot start. And how hotness is Porter's seat? Not very hot, but I can understand why some people might think that it is starting to get a little toasty, but very, very early days here. So Matt says, I honestly don't know how we are 0-4. I watch and don't think that it looks that bad, but we can't seem to figure out how to win. Do you think it's more of a roster construction issue or coaching that is to blame for the atrocious start? And can it be fixed at all? So what do you blame for this atrocious start and can it be fixed?
Yeah, I mean, look, it can be fixed, right? I mean, we're still... they haven't looked good on the road. I mean, that's for sure. They've looked really, really poor in two road games. Look, they've had more shots on target, more chances created, more touches inside the opponent's penalty area, more passes in the opponent's hat. Like, statistically, they've kind of racked those things up at home in two games now. And, it was 1-0 to Toronto, 2-1 today. So, I don't know. It's tough to pinpoint. Like, it's not a complete disaster in every single game, right? Like Porter said, and it's becoming kind of apparent now that they come out very slow, both in the first 10, 15 minutes of the first half and the first, they lost the game in the first 10 minutes of the second half today. So I think that's a collective issue. That I think a little bit of that is on the coaching staff. A little bit of that is on the players. I don't know. The other team, especially today, Acosta comes off the bench and, looks like he was sent down by God to win the game for Cincinnati today, right? The guy single-handedly ripped them to pieces, and that was 3 minutes, mm-hmm. right? They could have subbed him off after 3 minutes. That would have been incredible, right? guy comes on, right? Assist, assist, goal. All right, I'm out of here. See you later. Best 3 minutes I've ever played. I don't know. It's very tough to try and nail down what exactly the overriding issue is. But I think for the first time today, while we're playing in CONCACAF Cup, that excuse can't be applied to today's game. They had to travel 2,300 miles back from Costa Rica. Cincinnati had to travel 2,000 miles from Mexico. And Cincinnati kicked off 2 hours after the Revs game did. So that's basically a wash. So that excuse is gone now. I don't know. It's kind of tough to pin down exactly what the issue is, but it's definitely concerning.
Yeah, and sometimes too. It's hard to, looking at this one game, I think you can take, some things genuinely don't go your way. Like Shankalai hits the post twice. Like in a normal world, Shankalai has a lot of skill. He could, if he chips that ball slightly lower, this game is a 2-2 draw, and there's kind of a different narrative in terms of like this one game. But if you look at the overall arching issues from the beginning of the year to now, you look at the roster and like this team should be getting results. You know what I mean? There's too much talent here to be this bad, to be having this many performances. And Caleb Porter also said in the post-game press conference that he says, we don't have training right now. We're doing a lot of walkthroughs. We're doing a lot of videotape because, we need to recover. So, again, it's an excuse. And again, you can't use that excuse today. You cannot use this excuse today. But I wonder if this is something that, if Porter, in my opinion, too, it's hard to explain, but I think this is a really solid team on paper, but they're not, even if these guys play to their potential, the gap between what you expect from an MLS Cup team and now is so wide that you're going to have to make improvements. And Porter kind of implied that today too. So I think how this can be fixed is you're going to need to see a lot of movement in the summer window. You probably should have seen some movement in the past window, but I think you're going to need to make some improvements all the way around. And I know Matt Polster wasn't in this game today, but does Matt Polster, is he going to go, he's not going to take you from an 0-4 team to MLS Cup champions right off the bat. I think they're going to need to make some big splashes here if they want to fix it this year. And if they don't, you have to have the conversation of, do you sell some players and regroup and go for 2025? Because they're just so far off from what they should be doing right now. And it seems like every single game, I complain about Marc-Anthony Kay. Marc-Anthony Kay played fine today. We all, Carlos Hill is a phenomenal player. He had a bit of an off game today. We complain about Brioni. He played well today. It just seems like this team just doesn't seem to click or have consistent performances all the way around.
Yeah. But the other thing is though, okay. Yeah. I actually, in his lengthy list of excuses, I actually forgot about that. We haven't had time to train. So, okay. But you did have a preseason and you had a pretty settled roster. And you had a pretty healthy roster. So those guys were there and they were in training. And, we heard Polster talk about how he had everything all mapped out. he had the whole preseason mapped out. Today we're working on, you know, building out of the defensive third, or, you know, whatever the, whatever it's called now, moving into the midfield third. And, you know, like he had a very concise plan. He told us, you know, you're going to see the style. You're going to know what it is. He didn't say you'll see it in June. He said, you're going to see it and you'll know the style. And, you know, there are other MLS teams that have new coaches that they hit the ground running. I mean, DC United, did that look like a team that was still kind of trying to figure out? No, that guy, I can't pronounce it, Lassane, whatever it is.
I think.
Yeah, I don't really like him that much, so, you know, it's fine. I don't think he listens to the podcast. But anyway, Troy comes from the Red Bulls, right? And what are you going to get? What are you going to get from somebody coming out of the Red Bull system? You're going to get complicated, high pressing all the time. And if you look at any, like, they've actually replaced the Red Bulls. If you go on like fbref.com, you look at Opta's stats, DC United has shot straight to the top of all the pressing statistics. Like, they're winning the ball back in the attacking third. They're creating chances from that. They're their passes per defensive action is the best in the league. Like, so he's come in, and that wasn't DC United last year, by the way. DC United was just, I mean, I don't think anyone there knew what anyone was doing. So he's coming and put his blueprint on that team. And that was the first game, right? Game one, he comes out and it's like, oh, wow, these guys know what they're doing. They, you know, and pressing in the way that they press is not easy. So, yeah, okay, Porter hasn't had all the training time that he wants. You know, okay, fine, fair enough. But again, other coaches at other teams that were much, much worse than the Revolution last year have come out of the gate and done well. And, you know, and the Revs haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and John Herdman too in Toronto seems to have that team doing a complete 180 from where they were last year. Toronto looks like a legitimate contender this year. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Porter has. It's very frustrating because I really echo that statement of this team should not be this bad.
No, they shouldn't. I mean, all Toronto's doing is they're sitting back and they're just, you know, when they get the ball back, it's like that Will Ferrell movie. Just get the ball to the Italians, and, you know, that's it. All right, put everyone behind the ball, get it to one of the two of them, and that's it. Get out of the way.
Yeah. That whole team is Italians, aren't they? John says, who on this team is worth keeping? Is it a player issue or manager issue? We kind of got onto that in terms of who on this team is worth keeping. I mean, I have been thinking, like, who do you get rid of? I mean, I think those are decisions we'll have more of a clearer picture in the summer, but Vrioni, we've been ragging on him. Scores a goal. I think I said the other day that he can't score, you know, create his own chances. And then, of course, today he just steals the ball at midfield, runs down the field and scores on himself, scores by himself. So I guess that's a hot take that I can't really have anymore. Yeah, he heard me. I'm sorry. Two goals in those last two games. He's really shut us up. So, but I mean, maybe he's turning it around, question mark. I don't know. We have a few more months to figure out what the weak spots are, but right now this whole team, I do not know. Anyway, Revs UK, I feel Porter doesn't know his strongest 11. I am also yet to see a change in his philosophy. We don't really have an identity other than taking one too many touches. I have yet to see anything massively positive since he came in, other than Esmir being given an opportunity. Tom, any thoughts?
That's a pretty accurate assessment. He has given Esmir an opportunity, and, you know, I think Bruce was somebody that only put the, you know, he only put the kids in when there was nobody, after he had destroyed everybody and, you know, piled up the injury list. He looked around and went, all right, yeah, fine. I guess you and Buck can get in there. I haven't seen a drastic change in philosophy. The only thing I will say, though, is I feel like the one thing the Revs could do last year, before the whole thing fell apart, they could hit teams on the counter. They were a pretty effective counterattacking team, and they seem almost reluctant to counterattack, or they're not as direct with their counter. Like, there was a couple of times today where Tronkalai, gets the ball. He's got a chance to take, you know, get things going on the break. He's got a chance to take a player on, which if he beats that player is obviously that's going to create an up man situation, heading towards the attacking third. And instead he plays, you know, this like 40, 45 yard ball over to the other side of the field, which, you know, okay, he completes the pass, but that's a 40-yard sideways pass up in the air, and that takes time, and that slows the counterattack down. There's also times where they just They just stopped. They just stopped, turn around, and play the ball back. And Porter had said a couple weeks ago that there were times. This is the thing with Porter. He says things, but then you watch his teams playing. It's like, I don't see the correlation between what you're saying and what's actually happening. He said that there's a couple times in those moments where he wants them to go forward and they don't take that opportunity. But I keep going back to the games that I watched when he was in Columbus in 2022. And that would be a team that was, he was in his fourth year there. Those are his players. His style should have clearly been implemented. And they were doing the same thing. There were times where the ball, oh, okay, this is going to be a counterattack. Oh, no, that's odd. They've pulled up and knocked the ball back. And you know, they're just, the one thing I would say that has emerged is they're playing around in a U shape. They're just passing it around the perimeter. Even when they played into a center mid, they just bounce it back out to somebody in the back line. Like, they don't go anywhere. Which, by the way, the playing in the U-shape thing, his idol, Pep Guardiola, absolutely categorically hates playing in that way. So if anything, you could criticize Porter and say that what he's really doing is he's just doing a poor interpretation of how he thinks his idol has his teams play soccer.
Yeah, I'll leave it there. Good job. Paulo says, what pulls us out of this funk? Trade/acquisition, the return of Burrow or Brandon Bye, Champions Cup elimination, or nothing. And we've kind of touched on this already. I think you're going to need to bring in some, you're going to have to make a lot of changes in the summer transfer window if you do not get results anytime soon. But I'm not sure there's a path to MLS Cup this year. I'm starting to lose faith. I had not a lot of faith at the beginning of this week, and this loss really has not helped anything. Any final thoughts before we move on in terms of how to get this ship around?
Well, look, Borrero coming back, I think that could really help things. Because one, he's a talented player, but two, you know, I don't know, Chunkalai, he seems to be getting a little obsessed with this shooting outside the box thing. And if you look at his shot chart from last season and this season combined, he doesn't score goals from outside the penalty area. So you would think that he would be well advised to maybe try and get a little bit closer. So I think Borrero coming back, yeah, that would help. By the time Bye comes back, you know, this whole thing could be over.
That is true. I do think Bye would be a pretty nice bump because Nick Lima, who I feel like I'm hot and cold on. I'm not totally in love with Nick Lima. I think Bye over Lima is going to be a very good upgrade because I think Nick Lima might be someone that long-term you're not going to want to keep in the starting lineup. V says, do the Revs have the mentality to bounce back and make the playoffs? Seems like every loss is down to mental lapses and mistakes. I talked about this in my key takeaway. I'm going to say probably not, or at least it needs to change around. I don't know. Mentalities over a long season change. I'm curious to see how the team responds to Caleb Porter's post-game rants that we've talked about and see if they get a boost or after. And it's a full week of rest next week, by the way. They play Chicago Fire at home with a full week of rest. Chicago is not a team that I'm totally in love with. They have 4 points in four games. I believe they won on a freak play this week, right? Wasn't that Kettle Acosta's like long ball that the goalkeeper from Montreal misjudged? I don't know if you know, you watched
that game. The one that got caught up in the wind.
Yeah. That was Chicago. So three of Chicago's points are from that. So Chicago at home should be a win. So this should be I don't want to say domination 3 points, but we need 3 points next week. So this question, if they aren't able to get 3 points, I'm going to say I'm really, really questioning this team's toughness and mentality to not get a result. Any thoughts? Yeah, good.
I mean, well, the way things are at right now, I mean, I think we would all take a 3 points because the wind caught a ball and floated over the goalkeeper's head type of win. I mean, look, next week is just who cares how they win. It's a home game. You have got to get 3 points from that game. So, yeah, I don't even want to think about how we're all going to be feeling a week from now if that doesn't come to pass.
Yeah, you got that show, too, next week. So if you don't get 3 points, good luck. You're going to be doing these same questions. Teal Forever. Well, let's start here. Is Vrioni good now? Two goals, two games. Is Vrioni good now?
Yeah, look at that. You know what? Only took, things have turned around on the Vrioni questions very quickly. You know, there was a couple times today where there's a very limited amount of ways that Vrioni wants the ball played to him. He wants it played to him in behind on the ground where he only has to make like a 10 to 15 yard run and doesn't have to take any more than two or three touches. So in those moments, he can be effective, right? We see what happens if he gets on the ball like too early, like around the midfield line. He's not fast enough to tear away from the defenders and they catch up to him. His shooting ability from range, you know, has not shown itself to be great. I will say, though, he does shoot from inside the penalty area a majority of the time. So I think that's him at least being a little bit smart enough to know that he isn't the type of player that can score from range. So he doesn't try to do it, which is good. That's a sign of intelligence. The goal on Thursday night was a really well-taken goal. The goal today was, you know, he's always pressed, right? He's always put in a good effort level and gone and pressed the ball, and today he got rewarded for it. And he had a tidy little finish. So, yeah, I think he's showing what he's capable of.
Yeah, we're seeing some positive trends in the right direction, of course, once I gave up on him here. James Downing, by the way, Giacomo with now on pace for 8.5 goals this season. Is that enough for designated player status? I wouldn't go that far. I think you want a designated player striker scoring double digits. Ryan also says it was nice to see Vrioni actually get a goal. I hope his confidence continues to grow and hoping more goals will come. I will also say, too, these weren't tap-in goals. He did have to do a little bit of work to earn them in both of those the goals this week. So we'll get positive marks for him, and hopefully he can continue going, too. He also had a nice chance there in the first half, forcing Celentano making a diving stop to his left. So I'll give him credit for this one. But am I sold on Vrioni? No, but we're getting there. So Teal Forever also says, did we sell our soul a la Kenny Rogers golden fiddle situation for a CCC run? I don't know if we sold our soul. It was more so that Klimpier's coaching acumen led us perfectly to it. We didn't really sell our soul. We earned that through our hard work and tactical genius. But certainly the CCC run, it feels like League's Cup last year, we made it to the league of, or whatever it was, the round of 16, and then everyone got injured in that game or injured in that run. We ended up getting knocked out and did not seem worth it at all. It feels like we're setting up for getting knocked out in the next round and looking back and being like, boy, this wasn't worth it at all.
Yeah. Like you said, though, they qualified for this tournament. Did they make a deal with the devil, like, thing? This type of question comes up on almost every episode. It's like they didn't choose to play in this competition. They were told, you will now go and compete in this competition. And there's, you know, there's $5 million in prize money if you win it. And, you know, look, I get the whole, well, we should just not focus on this tournament because who cares? It's all about MLS. And like, I kind of get that. But at the same time, you know, the other team that I'm a fan of is Tottenham. And Tottenham is in a similar parallel to the Revs in that they don't win things very often. So how you can be a fan of a team that doesn't win much of anything ever, and then say, wow, we need to turn our nose up at this tournament. It's like, well, why? Are the Revs too good for a continental championship? Like Tottenham would qualify for Europa League, and fans are like, oh, who cares about Europa League? It's like, well, they haven't won that or anything else since 2008. Mm-hmm. So they should try to win anything that they're in. And Greg, like you said before we started, right? Like, if I understand it's not likely. But what would the ramifications for the Revs be if they were to get past Club America?
Oh, it would be a massive win. It would put the Revs, I wouldn't say it puts the Revs on the map in terms of like surpassing like the Red Sox or Patriots popularity, but it certainly turns a lot of heads. It's a big momentum swing. It certainly is a wing that you kind of hang your hat on. And certainly all these Caleb Porter questions about him being on the hot seat are gone. It's one of the biggest wins for your team probably in what, a decade? I mean, how many big wins? What's the biggest win that the Revs have had in the last, you know, 10 years? Probably have to go back to the 2014 playoffs, right? So we're talking about probably the biggest win in a decade.
Yeah, right. So that's why, like, this is why people follow sports teams, like, to, you know, to pull off the unexpected. So that's one of the benefits of this tournament is you get a shot at a really good team, the best team, you know, the best or one of the top two or three teams on the entire continent. you get to take two shots at them. So why not? I mean, it's, you know, it's March, right? Like the every American sports fan, or almost anyone that lives in America, period, falls in love with the NCAA men's basketball tournament every year. And why is that? It's because when a 13 seed beats a 4 seed, or when a 15 beats a 2, like, you know, we love those types of things. We love these shock results in a tournament where the underdog that isn't supposed to win turns around and wins. Like, that's what people are going to be cheering for the next 3 weeks. So why wouldn't you cheer for that when the Reds play against Club America? And I'm sure if they don't get through, we're going to get, you know, a bunch of people saying, oh, it wasn't worth it, it was a waste of time. It's like, well, then every season that every team has ever played that they haven't won a tournament was a waste of time, which is, you know, that's not really the case.
Mm-hmm. And we've strayed a little bit far away from the question, but I think I agree 100%. I think you have to, the other thing too is, like, you know what, we're sacrificing a 4 or 5 seed to be a 7 or 8 seed in the playoffs. Like, you know, I don't think this team is exactly MLS Cup. This isn't going to make or break whether or not we win MLS Cup. If we don't make the playoffs, you know, it's not because of 4 or 5 games in March. It's going to be because the team wasn't good enough. And I mentioned this the other day. If you look up the odds, the Revs have a better chance. It's still a long shot. You have a better chance of winning Champions Cup than you do MLS Cup right now. And that's because upsets happen. You know, you could get a red card. You could, you know, get a lucky bounce. You know, I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm not predicting a win. I'm predicting the complete opposite. But you still play these games, and you know, there upsets happen. So, by the way, since we have posted our last podcast, right after we finished recording, the news came out that the Revolution were trading legs with Club America. This is a request they made because they have motocross or something the Saturday after the first leg. So they have the Revs are going to be hosting now on April 2nd instead of April 9th because there is motocross or something that on the 13th, I guess. So because of the availability of Gillette Stadium, they cannot host. Tom, did you have any take, or do we want to move on?
A lot of people got really, really upset about this, you know, on the Blazing Musket, you know, in the comment section, you know, basically saying, you know, this is an outrage, and how dare they, and this just shows that they don't care about, you know, the Revs, and it's, you know, this would never happen, and da da da. Like, the reality is, and this was laid out in an article on the Blazing Musket very, very clearly, motocross and monster trucks are coming to Gillette Stadium on the 13th and 20th. And I, just to get an understanding of what that means, I watched a time-lapse video of the amount of dirt that one has to bring into their stadium to have motocross and monster trucks. It is a lot of dirt. It is a huge logistical thing that needs to be coordinated. And there's no other way. It was booked before the Revs were even in this tournament. And there's nothing they can do about it. And this happens to other teams in other sports, by the way. The Celtics and Bruins, there are times when the Celtics and Bruins, like, they have to clear out of the Garden for a week or a week and a half because something's coming, like the circus is coming to town or something like that. Like, this is just a reality of, it's a big stadium, it seats 70,000 people, and if someone walks up to you and says, we want to give you a wad of cash to use your stadium, you're going to say yes.
Yes. And I want to point out too that we got a comment at the end of last year that we don't disagree enough on this show. And I just want to point out that I am vehemently disagreeing with you here. Now, I will say this. I will say this. A couple of things. I understand how this happened, but this would never happen to, say, the Patriots or the Red Sox. And I do know that there are some teams that have, you know, like if an NBA team makes the playoffs, they can reschedule or cancel an event. I have a very vivid memory of, like, way back in the day of like 2005, 2006, Vince McMahon going on ESPN News and chewing out Stan Kroenke because the Denver Nuggets made the playoffs, and so they had to cancel a WWE event. And Vince McMahon was basically calling Stan Kroenke a terrible businessman who has no faith in his teams and blah, 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 which is very funny because Kroenke has won a Super Bowl and owns Arsenal and is a very successful team owner. So there are some situations where you can stipulate moving a date, moving an event. Maybe you could have, you know, done something where motocross gets moved to the next week or something like that. But I think this is a situation where they didn't think this would happen. They didn't think this would come up. And I think, as you know, this team and the fans of this team know that they're always in the shadow of the Patriots, and now we're in the shadow of motocross. I think it's just a very annoying kind of reminder that, you know, sometimes because we don't have our own stadium and because it's just doesn't feel like a big priority of the crafts, it seems like this is something that it's just an unfortunate thing that, of course, it happens to the Revs. And the other thing, too, that I'll mention is that, in my opinion, you definitely want the second leg. Jake, in his article, argued, and I do understand his point, that maybe the first leg benefits you because it's on a homestand. I still think you want the second leg. I don't think there's much advantage in having the first leg. But I thought it was an interesting case that Jake laid out, that it might not be the worst thing in the world to happen to the Revolution. But the other thing, too, I'll suggest is, listen, you have two teams. If one team is expected to win, you know, if you create unusual conditions, really that benefits the underdog. How about we just play the soccer game on the motocross dirt? I think you could just put some flags out, just put chalk over the dirt. You can just wipe it away when you're done. I think that would have been a solution that everyone would have won. Club America would have been pissed. CONCACAF probably would have been pissed. But I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, I mean, they played a game in the snow.
Yeah.
So we don't care. You know, so let's call it brown snow.
Yeah. What's the difference between a snowstorm and, you know, mud, you know? We're still on Seal Forever's questions here. I feel like you feel more frustrated than defeated after today. Do my subjective feelings mean there's going to be a turnaround at some point? At least playoffs are big. I assume that last comment means it feels like playoffs, making the playoffs is a bigger question. Do my subjective feelings mean that there's going to be a turnaround at some point? I feel like it, but I also felt that they would absolutely get a result in this game. So maybe ask me next week, because if they don't win next week, we are really, really in trouble. So the Sporting Clinic says, how many goals will Messi and company score on us? At least one, according to the ticket reps at the New England Revolution, who have guaranteed there's a 100% chance of Leo Messi scoring at Gillette Stadium this year. How many goals do you think Messi will score on the Revolution? Let's just pick a number at random. Any guesses?
Yeah, zero, because he's not going to play.
Ooh, what about road games? What about Miami?
Oh, when they go to Miami?
Yeah, combined between the two.
Oh.
I'm going to say two. Oh, you go three. How many? What about Suarez? Suarez can't stop scoring.
Three.
All right. Woof. Domination.
One and two. One in New England and then two in Miami.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. What Now really says, where can fans find better antidepressants this season? And Big John says, it's just depressing at this point. I don't know. When's the next time I'm going to be happy with this team? Maybe we need a sponsor that sells antidepressants. That might be something we need to look into, because this is going to be a long year. Revs Ball Knower, I bought season tickets for the first time because I thought the team was good and the second half of last year was due to management chaos. I was wrong. Guess I don't know ball after all. Thoughts and prayers to Revs Ball Knower going through an identity crisis. Our thoughts are with you, Revs Ball Knower. Chris Felucas, where will the wooden spoon fit in the trophy case? I guess right between the supporter shield and the Superliga. What else is there in the trophy case? So I think that is going
US to... U.S. Open? How quickly we forget.
That's another thing, too. Wouldn't it be nice to play the U.S. Open Cup this year to kind of, you know, I feel like the more competition. Okay. Well,
Do they really have time?
Not according to Don Garber.
This little tin pot tournament. Like, how long has it even been around?
The U.S. Open Cup? Oh, Leagues Cup.
Yeah. No, the U.S. Open Cup. Well, 100 years? Well, yeah. It's time to move on. We've created a entirely made up tournament for no reason at all that nobody was asking for, except for MLS and Liga MX's owners, who wanted to find ways to cram even more money into their pockets. So we don't have time for Open Cup. We've got to make some money in the League's Cup, and let Vermont Green win the little tin pot thing, and who cares.
Vermont Green to Champions Cup. Make it happen. I want to see him go all the way. I think to Brockton United FC is in the U.S. Open Cup Championship, so we'll have to root for them as well. Be nice to see an amateur rear Vermont Green guy. Okay.
All the way.
What about Rhode Island FC? First point this weekend? Okay.
Yeah.
Hot take. We need U.S. Open Cup so we can make excuses when this team sucks in May and June and say, well, it's because of the schedule congestion. You know, they can't train. Dinsdale says, hot take, but I think Sean Kalai is overrated. He should have put away some of his chances today. I will say, I'm a big Sean Kalai defender. That chip should have gone in. You have a one-on-one with the keeper. You should bury it, but just a little bit too much on that one. I also thought his touch leading to the shot was a little too heavy, but I'm nitpicking and splitting hairs. I think overall, he's a quality player. He's going to be fine in the long run. I don't think he has a goal, though, in MLS play, so maybe there's a little bit of concern there. What are your thoughts, Tom? Did we overrate Tomas Sean Kalai?
So it dawned on me today that he doesn't seem quite like the same player he was last year. So the very cynical way of looking at this that I've come up with is that last year he was on loan with an option to buy. So he came in, played really well, and he looked like somebody that fit into the team, that he would get out wide, take players on, dribble past them, you know, pass and set other players up when he needed to, and then shoot when he had a good opportunity. Now that he's here on a permanent deal, he looks a bit more selfish. And I looked at his shot charts during the week just to kind of try and confirm this. He's pretty much shooting from anywhere. He's just taking shots from like well outside the penalty area. And he's never scored in MLS with a shot from outside the penalty area. Like Noel Buck has more goals from outside the penalty area than he does. And Noel Buck only took like 18 shots last year. So I have become a little concerned that this used to happen to me as a coach. You'd have a player like a tryout that shows a version of themselves that then doesn't kind of, they're not quite that player once they make the team. So yeah, I think Sean Kalai's been a little selfish at times. His shot selection could definitely improve a little bit. I don't know. I'm less convinced by Sean Kalai than I was, and I'm surprised that I'm even saying that, because I thought he came in and he was electric last year, but not to the same extent so far this year. And I think Borrero coming back is going to be good for him, because it's going to put a little bit more pressure on him to perform, because Borrero is somebody that I think plays that wide player role about as good as you can expect in MLS.
Yeah. I also think too, I'm really not a fan of him as a nine. I know you're saying you want him in the box creating chances, but it seems like he's better coming in from the wing, taking on players, dribbling the ball and getting into the box than he is, being up on an island as a nine.
But he wasn't taking players on today.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half. So in the first half, he was playing on the side where our seats are. He wasn't taking players on. The second half. The second half, they were attacking towards the fort, and he was on our side. It was a time like he had a player in front of him, and about 15 yards. It's like, take that player on and beat him and get round him and try and put a ball in to the penalty area. Instead, he just puts in a cross. And like I said earlier, he's playing these like 35, 40-yard cross-field passes. It's like, no one's asking you to be like John Robertson and like, you know, spray these creative passes from the wings, which is an obscure reference to a player that played for Derby County. Played for Nottingham Forest. Anyway, like, take players on and go past them. And he's not doing it. And I, at least two or three times today, it's like, okay, take this guy on, just take him on and beat him. Doesn't do it. So that's been kind of discouraging for me, that if he's going to morph into this, I'm shooting no matter what, I'm just going to get on the ball and I'm just going to shoot. Well, that's the type of player that you want playing up top. Someone who's just going to look to shoot at every opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just, his wide play has been, it's been a little frustrating.
We'll move on. We're coming up to the hour mark, so we will start running through the rest of these a little quick. But Josh, just a comment here. No question. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Just a reminder that you all do an amazing job and deserve a medal for engaging Twitter and talking about the Revs. Thank you, Josh. Really appreciate it. I do deserve a medal. I deserve a medal for watching this team. Am I right? BlueJay6 says, I asked for your season wrap up last year. If the Revs were the worst run team in MLS, you guys said to wait until the start of the season. I'll ask again, are the Revs the worst run team in MLS? And I will pause here a second and add a little bit of context, because I think too, BlueJay6 was the person that asked me to, compare them to every team and how they do, you know, comparatively to spending and designated players. And that was something I was going to do in the off season and write an article about. But I do not, I just did not have the time to look at 30 different teams and their spending habits and their designated players and their front office setup. Last year, there were a number of teams like San Jose, Colorado, Montreal, Chicago that you can kind of point to and say, boy, this is a mess. You know, Chicago re-signed their GM and they've missed the playoffs 5 years in a row. Montreal has had like 10 different coaches in a decade. Colorado is Colorado. San Jose is San Jose. Just terrible ownership in both those teams. So I think last year, if you asked me this question, my answer was probably no. You know, the team has made, the Revs have made the playoffs 4 out of 5 years. They have a supporter shield. They've made the Champions League, Champions Cup, whatever we're calling it, twice in those 5 years. So since Bruce Arena came in, you kind of can't really, you look at the results and also they're usually spending in the top half of the league. So it's really hard to say that one of the worst run teams when they are, you know, a playoff team, not winning MLS Cups, but they're in the playoffs. They're competing. This year, again, early days. I will say if they are wooden spoon material, I think you can really make an argument that the Revs are the worst run team in MLS. You can make that argument if the results go poorly. I think that if you are, the way I put it, I've put it a few times, if you go back to the Revs get knocked out in the playoffs last year, no one on earth would have said, bring back 27 players, promote your technical director to sporting director, reshuffle your coaching staff and bring in a new head coach and pray. Cause that's essentially what they did. And they brought in a new goalkeeper. That was it. And they didn't do a ton of moves to actively improve this roster. They're really just going off of this team. You know, when we get back to full strength, we're going to be what we were in the first half of the season, which still wasn't like a dominant team. So I think that if you look at this team coming into this year, they didn't really put themselves in a very good position, even assuming that the stink from last year is gone, which I'm not completely convinced it is. And they've done some things like bring in Thomas Vatsleek, who never plays a game, and then you have to use your offseason buyout on him. Now you can't buy out a player and get salary cap relief throughout the rest of the season. So it's mistakes like those that you say, boy, this is not good. And if you're, it's certainly not good that you're calling out players saying they're not on the bus for games. And so there's a lot to be between here and now, you know, between now and the end of the year, we have a lot to figure out. And if this team, again, this team on paper just doesn't seem like it can be that much of a disaster, but you look at TFC's team from last year, they were a complete disaster and there was a lot of chaos from the organization and Bob Bradley losing control of that locker room. So, you know, it's totally possible that this year, you know, things go sideways for the Revs. And at the end of the season, when BlueJay6 asked me this question again, I'm going to say, yep, absolutely. I'm not really ready to say that today. I still think I want to give them a month or two to turn the results around because I don't think the team is this bad. But if we are a wooden spoon team at the end of the year, we're going to look back and say, why did we not clear house last year? This was a complete disaster and everyone should be cleared out. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I would have been supportive of bringing, you know, the majority of this roster back, but I think what needed to change was the coaching staff needed a complete clean out.
Yes.
And over, like there needed to be, I think a complete change with the coaching staff to then get as much out of this group as possible. Because they're an experienced veteran group that is capable of challenging for some sort of a trophy this year. But they didn't do that and they didn't overhaul the roster. So they didn't do either of the two. So I would have liked to have just seen, Richie, PA, basically everyone associated with Bruce. Look, Bruce brought you all in. He's gone. You're all out. And like I said, the podcast that we did when Porter was hired, I would have liked to have seen them made a kind of a bolder appointment and tried to bring somebody that is going to take the playing style of this team in a new direction. Like we've seen, you know, Montreal has taken a chance. I think they just went and got Columbus. They went and got a kind of a young, unproven coach who they thought they could come in and really change things. Wilfred Nancy is an outstanding example. By the way, from the last place that Porter was, he left. Nancy comes in, and they played the best soccer that I've ever seen a team play in MLS before last season. Mm-hmm. So I said at the time, this is potentially what you're going to get. You just made a safe hire, and this is what you get when you make a safe hire. But you know, look, San Jose, they're down in 28th, just one spot above the Revs at this point. So you know, they still look like a ship that's lost at sea. But I think next Saturday's match against Chicago is that's a loser leaves town match. You know, you lose that game, and I just think, you know, you can pretty much question anything that you want at that point if they don't get 3 points next week.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm glad you brought up Nazi. I mean, you want an example of a poorly run organization, Montreal handing over arguably the best coach in Major League Soccer, letting him go to an Eastern Conference rival, and then watching him win MLS Cup. I mean, what do you think about as a fan? You know what I mean? I mean, how upsetting is that? Especially when you've had a rotating door of coaches year after year after year. But yeah, I mean, look at San Jose. I mean, a few years ago, their coach was basically begging to get fired. I mean, he was completely mailing in games. He was like, my contract's up at the end of the year. I don't know why I'm still here. They're not investing in this team. So I think there are some teams that are real bottom of the barrel. Like, oh man, I can't imagine cheering for this team. At least the Revs have, you know, I know it's a very far down consolation prize, but you know, you can expect playoffs from the team. At least I hope so. Blue Jay 6, by the way, says my questions, who will have a better record this year, 2025 Revs or 2025 Patriots? I don't know if he means 2025 or 2024. Cause this year, I think he means 2024, like next year's Patriots. Well, next year is in the fall, but you get what I'm saying. Which team will be more miserable? Any thoughts?
Well, you know, the thing with the Patriots is they've fallen pretty far, but you know, if you're a Patriots fan, every time you go to Gillette Stadium, you can look up at 6 Super Bowl trophies, and you know where they're at now seems a long way from there. So I would imagine, yeah, a Patriots team that doesn't make the playoffs has got to be more frustrating to a Patriots fan than a Revs team that, when you look up and after you look away from the 6 Super Bowl banners, if you can squint your eyes a little bit, you can kind of almost make out the 3 entire trophies that the Revs have won. So, mm-hmm.
And the wooden spoon.
I don't know. The Patriots don't have a quarter. I mean, I know Jacoby's back, but that they might be a couple more pieces away from figuring that all out.
Yeah. I don't have a positive view on the Patriots until they have a decent quarterback. Brandon, let's go back to the Revs. Who is the ideal pair to play defensive central midfield in games without Matt Polster?
I thought Kay and Arks were fine today. Arks did the yellow card that he picked up was completely unnecessary. I don't understand this like fascination with defensive midfielders for no reason, just putting two arms around a guy and spin. Like Acosta was 80 yards away from the Revs goal. And that's where you're going to pick up your yellow card. That's where you're going to do your professional foul, which other than that, I thought Arks and Kay played quite well. But there's another question in here too. I don't know if we'll get to it, a reference to the midfield kind of not existing.
Yes.
That is the thing that I having seen 3 or 4 different players play in central midfield, the fact that they clear out of the middle and you have like, you have Carles and Polster and Carles is getting on the ball in the left back space. Like, is that's seriously where you want your playmaker getting on the ball in the left back space? Porter. And this is the thing that I think he's implemented. There are always players dropping into that space, and that takes players out of the middle. And that makes play again, to go back to the U shape, you start dropping everybody around the perimeter. The other team, they're not stupid. It's easy to defend against. We're just going to sit in, watch these guys play around in a half circle. I don't know. There definitely needs to be some sort of rethink as to how the midfield is being utilized. But every time I see one of these guys getting on the ball under no pressure, out where the left back should be or the right back should be, you know, anybody can do that. Polster, Harks, Buck, any one of these guys can receive a 15-yard pass and knock it back to the guy that gave it to him. Mm-hmm. Greg, you could probably do that three times out of four.
You vastly overestimate my athletic ability, but I appreciate it. Very much appreciate it.
Two out of four.
I'll take two out of four. Executive Eric is something to be said for getting the struggles out early as opposed to last year's strong start and eventual drop off. Obviously, you can't go on like this, but it feels far from a hopeless club. I love the enthusiasm. I love the optimism. I don't think it really works that way, but I will say Barrero and Bai will eventually come back. You will eventually get to train because Champions Cup is ruining everything. It doesn't ruin everything for Cincinnati. Ruins things for us, so we got to remember that. So I think there is, and there's only, you can only go up, right? I mean, they have to improve. They literally have to improve. I do think that as opposed to the normal summer struggles, I think it is understandable to why there is a kind of sluggish start. But go back to 2022, the last time we were in Champions League, we never recovered. So appreciate the optimism, but I don't really share that mindset. I think either way, it's tough to spin this start.
Yeah, maybe I can talk myself into that on the way to the game on Saturday, but not before then.
I like the positive video. We needed one. Yeah, positive. I love it. Good job, Eric. Good job, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I was on here a week ago, and I wrote a whole article about, like, you know, look, come on, there's a long way to go here. Let's not, you know, let's just try and stick with it. But it's getting harder. So I do commend his positivity.
Tim says, why did Heal struggle to influence the game today? Nagging injury, heavy legs tactics. Seemed like he was often playing way deep or out wide more than he was central, which is, I believe, basically what you just said. So yes. Thumbs up.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Look where Acosta, go and look at his, like his heat map or his, like his touches chart, and look where he gets on the ball, and then pull up the same thing for Carlos. I mean, I haven't done it yet, but like, he's getting on the ball in the wrong places, and he's 100%, I can't remember his name. He's 100% correct. Why do you want him getting on the ball out wide?
Yeah.
He wants to get on the ball in between the lines. And it's funny, like as soon as Nacho comes in, the two of them start operating really well together. They start playing in those spaces that you want them to play in a little bit more. But that's where you have to get a player like him the ball. He doesn't need the space that, you know, that somebody like a Polster or a K or like a Lima, he doesn't need that much space to get on the ball. Right, he's like a 12 to 18 inch player. If he has 12 to 18 inches of separation from where the ball meets his foot to the defender, he can control the ball. That's all he needs, 12 to 18 inches. You and I need 10 yards. Maybe you need 15, and any random human that's never played soccer needs probably 20 yards. Carlos Hill needs 12 inches. So that's where you want him to get on the ball. He doesn't need to go out wide to comfortably control a pass. you need more than 15 yards. 15 yards is a lot.
I apologize. I think everyone knows why I'm laughing at Carlos Hill just needs 12 inches. I am tired. Chris, hello. Please talk a bit about the solid effort put forth by Kessler today. Thanks. I don't have any thoughts about Henry Kessler. I thought he played fine. Tom, please say something. I can't stop laughing.
Kessler was fine. I mean, he wasn't great. I don't know. Kessler's fine. You know, he's a good defender. I think he works well with Romney. You know, him and Romney are a good pairing. To be fair though, you could pair just about anybody up with Romney. And, I think he makes everybody kind of look like a good partnership because he covers for them really, really well. But no, Kessler, he's done well. He doesn't do a lot with the ball. He doesn't create too much. You know, he's not able to play, you know, 40, 50 yard, you know, passes that really threaten the other team, or he doesn't necessarily thread balls in between the lines like Farrell's at least willing to try. But yeah, no, Kessler, I think has been solid, and he's a good defensive presence. And that's the thing too, that kind of is, we haven't really talked about because there's a lot of things not going well. So far, you know, I know they've given up a lot of goals, but it hasn't been the center back pairing, right? Like Mensah's come in and done well. Romney is about as consistent as you can get. Kessler's done fine at center back. Farrell, like all four of them, you know, that's a real strength of the team, which is kind of funny to say that because they've given up 10 yeah. goals in four games.
Agreed 100%. I'm okay now. Thank you for taking over. Triangle Triangle. I believe, I'm sure there was more to this comment, but it was just referee. Do we want to complain about the referees this week? It's going to be this way every single week. Any thoughts on the referees?
Yeah, look, they're equally bad for both teams.
Yeah.
Sure. The free kick for Acosta on the second goal, like, sorry, that was a foul. The yellow card that Veroni got, when I watched it back, he made contact with the goalkeeper's foot. It wasn't that he blocked the ball. It's that he made contact with the goalkeeper's foot, which you can't do. So that's a foul. Like, you might not like it, but that's a foul. There was 10 yellow cards, but some of the stuff it's really simple. If you kick the ball away or you pick it up, like Yedlin, it's a stupid yellow card. You pick the ball and walked away with it like a five-year-old child. You get yellow cards for that type of stuff. So no, look, they had some questionable calls. The only thing I would ever really complain about, because again, you got to keep in mind they're equally good or poor for both teams. They don't have an agenda against the Revs. The only thing that continues to perplex me is that MLS doesn't have goal line technology, which is a complete joke.
Agreed 100%. I do, there's a follow-up question here. Tim, what is the rule on blocking the goalie's distribution when the ball is in their hands? To what extent is Vrioni allowed to play defense there? And at what point does it become a foul? I'm not a rules expert in the slightest. And I thought the rule was that you couldn't block a goalkeeper's punt in the slightest. I have a vague memory of a game from like 10 years ago where a keeper punts the ball and someone wasn't even trying to block it, but it bounced. It was low and it bounced off them, and that person got a yellow card. So I thought that was the rule, that you just can't even try to play defense. Is that, do you know what the rule is, Tom?
I don't know what the exact letter of the law is, but no, like, I mean, we've seen goals scored where the goalkeeper goes to launch it and he smashes it off of a player and it goes back into his own goal. You don't get those back. No, but look, goalkeepers are very heavily protected, and in some instances they should be heavily protected. When they're on the ground and they've got their hand on a ball, you can't just smash it out of their hand. Like, I mean, that's logical, right? You can't plow into them and knock them down when they jump and that sort of thing. They're allowed to get away with punches a little bit more than, well, someone punching somebody without goalkeeper gloves on. But in the moment I thought, well, he just blocked it. And, you know, the goalkeeper certainly saw him standing there, but he made contact with the goalkeeper. If you make contact while they're kicking the ball, they're always going to call a foul. But the exact letter of the law, no, I don't know. But no, I don't believe that you just have to. It's not a free kick. That's it. Like, it's open play. The ball's in his hands, but it's open play. And you're not just going to drop off 10 yards and let him put it on the ground and waste three more seconds before he has to kick it. Mm-hmm.
Maybe there has to be a certain distance. Maybe goalkeepers need 12 inches. All right. Dr. Defense says, by the way, if you do know the rule, please send it in and we will put it on the record for our show next week. Dr. Defense with a comment here. Not good enough. Problems with the roster, coaching, and performance on top of schedule and bad luck. That's very true. Team is short at least one match winner. Maybe Barrero can become that guy. I don't think Vrioni can. It's a long season, so if they hit on one to two players, there's plenty of time. And I'm going to add one more thing here, too, and I might have an article about this on the Blazing Musket if I have the time, but there is a report from The Athletic that they are talking about changing a rule mid-season, which would allow all teams to have three designated players and three U22 players. I will try my best to summarize this as quick as I can, but basically, if you have three senior designated players like the Revs have right now, you can only have one U22 player. That is Dylan Barrero. If you have two designated players or one or zero, you can have three U22 players. If you have two senior designated players and a young DP, which is basically a designated player that is 23 years or younger, or a designated player that doesn't make more than, I think it's like $1.68 million. I won't get into where that number comes from, but it makes sense. Then you also get three designated players. So most teams in the league have three U22 players, but four teams, the Revs, Orlando, I think Nashville, and someone else, they have three senior designated players and they only can have one U22 player. So if this rule is changed, the Revolution can go get two more U22 players, which is significant because U22 players, they have restrictions on salary and age, but you can spend an unlimited transfer fee, and that transfer fee is not taken into account into their salary budget hit. So basically, this rule would give the Revolution a chance to spend unlimited money on two young players with a high ceiling. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm sure I'll get questions about it, but that's essentially the rule change that may have significant changes for the Revolution, because right now they don't have a designated player spot. They don't have a U22 spot. They probably have some TAM. There's still some hurdles. They're going to have to clear out another couple of roster spots. Right now they only have one open, so they'd have to open another one, but that would change what the summer looks like for the Revolution very, very much. And you could get to one or two more game changers. So, Tom, any follow-up questions, or do you think I did okay with that?
No, it makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, if that comes into effect, say on like July 1st, when the European transfer windows, you know, open up around that time anyway, you know, if Bobby Wood is going to, you know, Bobby Wood doesn't seem like he's able to play at all. I mean, he didn't even make the bench today. I think he's played less than an hour on the field in eight games now. So if Bobby Wood isn't even going to be an occasional backup option, then this spot opening up, okay, now you can spend some money on a striker that might want to come here because they're not going to be anticipating being buried behind two senior strikers, which wouldn't have been the case in the offseason. Maybe they looked at some guys in the offseason and they weren't interested in, well, you've got a DP and a 31-year-old who scored seven goals last year. Like, I don't really want to come here and not play. But, you know, Bobby Wood, really feel for him. He's not that old. He's not so old that you would expect his career to be coming to a complete halt, but it looks pretty grim. I mean, they've basically said that it's a permanent knee injury. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, if there's really no path for him to be a 45 to 60 minute a week player, then yeah, I mean, I think that would be a good spot to use that, whatever it's called, U22
initiative slot. Yes.
Sure.
You can just call it U22. That's what I do. Bobby Wood too. Very frustrated. I mean, boy, came back last year, had filled a pretty decent role as a backup striker after having so many injury problems in Salt Lake. Now, right back to the trainer's room. Tough go for him. Mike Kennedy says, happy St. Patrick's Day. Stout or whiskey?
Well, you know, I don't drink liquor. I only drink, beer, coffee, and water. I went to Tavolino in Patriot Place before the game, and I attempted to order a Guinness, but I was informed that they were out of Guinness on St. Patrick's Day. And it was, you know, it was noon. I thought this would be a good way to start the day. Apparently that should have been a sign of what was to follow, that I couldn't get a Guinness on St. Patrick's Day, that, you know, the Revs weren't going to get 3 points in their home game. I would have liked to have had a Guinness today and 3 points, and I got neither.
I was going to say, I, not to steal your answer, I feel like Guinness is what you go with on St. Patrick's Day, but I guess not. I've also been to Ireland, and I've been to the Guinness factory, so I guess I have a little bit more reason to buy or order a Guinness. But between the two, I'm not a bad. I'll drink whiskey. I used to drink more back in my youth. Now I'm liquor hits me harder than it used to, so I'll stick to one Guinness, and then it's waters for me the rest of the night. David S. on the bright side, I really like the new home kits. However, I would like to see them with red socks instead of blue. Any thoughts on red versus blue socks with the home kits?
None.
All right. I'll go red. Sure. Mix it up. You have the red shoulders. You have the red sleeves. You know what? Maybe that's what pulled this team back. This team, if they had red socks, they'd have at least 1 point. It's the socks that's making the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, pulls in association with the, you know, the Boston Red Sox, who are probably going to be joining the Revs in the cellar this year.
Last place. So, yes.
So maybe not. Maybe they need to stay away from the Red Sox. Well, the White Sox. How the White Sox been doing? Maybe that's what they need. Maybe they need to wear home whites at home.
Yeah, White Sox were terrible last year, too.
So, they were?
Yeah. Maybe they just don't play with socks.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're doing. No socks. So you play the Champions Cup in the dirt pits for motocross. You no socks. Turn this season around. Tom, any final thoughts before we depart here today?
Yeah, look, I trying to keep some perspective. You know, there's still 30 games to go. They have two more home games, you know, and then they have two away trips after that that are, you know, to Yankee Stadium and Toronto and whatever they call their cramped little stadium. So look, not a lot of travel coming up. Two more home games that, you know, there's still an opportunity here to turn things around. But it needs to happen. It needs to happen very quickly. I mean, I really feel like the next Saturday's game against Chicago, that any way that you can get them, you need to get 3 points from that game. My only other thought is, Porter's press conference today, it's pretty deflating. I think it's not a good sign that you're four games in your MLS career with this team, and you're already bringing out bus references. You're contradicting yourself. You're saying it's you take the blame, but then you turn around and blame everybody else. Like, you know, you want to talk up your two MLS cups. Okay, that's great, but we also can also go on your Wikipedia page and see that you missed the playoffs three times out of four when you were in Columbus. So maybe he could calm down a little bit with the my resume, you know, can't be questioned type of talk for maybe till they win a game. Maybe stop mentioning that you've won MLS Cup until your current team wins a soccer game in this competition. And then you can tell us your great stories about how great you were in the past.
You know, you won a college cup in Akron too. I don't know if you knew that.
I did. And then he, in an article in 2015 on MLS.com, he talked about how he essentially completely abandoned his, in his own words, naive approach to playing soccer that was successful with Akron. So he stumbled a little bit in Portland, and then immediately basically took all of his philosophical views on soccer and punted them and decided to become a more pragmatic coach from that point forward. So, yeah. Good for you, Caleb. Your idol, by the way, his idol, Pep Guardiola, is not that type of coach. So, yeah, I'm trying to give Caleb every opportunity. I like some of the stuff that he says. Haven't seen a ton on the field that looks really promising. But again, you know, for me, look, my two favorite coaches are Marcelo Bielsa and Ange Postecoglou. And, you know, those guys are completely uncompromising in how they play and what they expect of their teams, and they're able to go out and get teams to perform. Caleb so far has a long way to go to measure up to the two of them in how his team plays, but also how he handles himself in press conferences. This kind of cliche stuff and flip-flopping on what you're trying to say, it's just kind of disappointing, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I don't hate it. Let's see how the team responds. I think it might light a fire under their ass. Let's go. I'm a big Caleb Porter guy. He's led us to the quarterfinals of Champions Cup. How can we doubt this guy? I just wanted to give a couple of quick shout outs. First off, there was a person I've been talking to on Instagram. He's just started a fan page. It's the New England Minutemen. So if you're on Instagram, go shoot them a follow. Also, make sure you're following us at Revolution Recap. Also, Tom, we got a review after our last game. It's on iTunes. It's by Deeper Dave, and Deeper Dave gave us 2 stars, our first 2-star review, and he said some useful information, but mostly negative nabobs of negativity. There are better pods. So just want to shout out Deeper Dave. I bet he feels like a real dumbass right about now. 0-4 to start. I look forward to your apology, Deeper Dave. And as for the rest of you that have a brain and understand this team deserves to be crapped on when they start 0-4 in the regular season, make sure you give us a review on iTunes or Spotify to drown out Deeper Dave. And also make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. No, I said Twitter already. Crap. X, whatever it's called. Blue Sky, Threads, anything you can think of. We're there. Revolution Recap. And we're also on every platform that you can listen to podcasts. So make sure you are subscribed there. Also, be sure to make sure you check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket. You can subscribe to them on Substack and read Tom and I's writing. Yeah, that's it. Tom, you'll be back next week following the Chicago game, hopefully talking about 3 points. Thank you again for everyone to listening. Oh, I can't get through this outro. Come on, Greg, you got this. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap presented by BetOnline. And we'll be back next week after Chicago. Tom will be here. The Revs will have 3 points. I guarantee it, just like I guaranteed PC making the NCAA tournament. Go Revs!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.